So you've got an impacted area, which is much larger, that's about 10 by 10, and that's where you have drifts and streams of oil and very broken oil water cover. And then you got a major slick. That was at the last chart I saw, and that was about midnight, but I think it was an 11 p.m. type of chart, or maybe it had to be a daylight type chart. So it was probably at dusk last night. This morning we had no assessment because we couldn't get into the air. And hopefully we're creating that assessment right now. I'm going to break right now, folks. I got to get back on top of this thing. Thank you.
Frank Garassi, president of Exxon Shipping, was just finished concluding his remarks. We expect another Exxon conference at the end of the day. They've been scheduling them for 6, but they usually have not started until 7 or 8, even 8:30 p.m. last night. We're hoping to have some comments from some of the community leaders who have been present at the conference in just a moment or two. Briefly, Frank Garassi, have several bits of information. First of all, Exxon has announced they will no longer comment on the specific conditions of the accident. The NTSB is on the station and conducting an investigation. They are going to refrain from conducting any or from making any announcements. The wind that has picked up is beginning to cause substantial problems. There were gusts at the airport last night that tore part of the roof off the Valdez Airport. Gusts of 70 miles per hour. The wind damaged the boom around the Exxon Valdez. Additionally, the planned dispersant used today from HERCS has been from a T-130 Hercules aircraft was postponed. The Hercules aircraft were able to fly, but the helicopters used to control the dispersant delivery were unable to fly. The FAA has grounded all helicopters in the Valdez Airport because of the increase in the wind. We do have some more notes, and we'll go through those as far as the what has been going on, what the announcement was made at the conference today. But at this time, Alaska's Lieutenant Governor Steve McAlpine, who is also the former mayor of Valdez and certainly has many still strong ties to the community, is with me here at the back of the Valdez Civic Center Ballroom where the press conference took place. After going through a series of just basically briefing statements about the rate of flow and whatnot, Frank Garassi did say, got into his own feelings and assessment, personal feelings of the event, and the first statement he made was that he and his people are quote-unquote gaining confidence by the hour on the that they are getting a handle on this. They're beginning to make some progress. At this point, Lieutenant Governor, do you feel that do you share the same confidence that the situation is improving?
I have a sense of very guarded caution about it all, Dave. I think that the people who have come here from outside of the state and from around the world are coming to a situation of what we would describe here as normal conditions. That passed by has been a time of ideal conditions. I think I asked the question of Mr. Ariasi last night when I interviewed him together with Admiral Nelson and the commander. I asked the question, why wasn't, as the contingency plan calls for, the vessel immediately boomed? The response is considered to be one to gear itself up toward mechanical recovery of the oil. In my estimation, if the tanker had been boomed, even if it took 1,500 feet of booming material to contain all of that oil, surface pumping could have been engaged, skimming could have been engaged, those sorts of things. I've talked to a number of Alyeska employees whose names I won't mention, but many of them were standing by their telephones with their gear ready to go out wondering when is the call going to come for me to respond, and the call never came. Mr. Ariasi did indicate to me that he had almost instant communication with George Nelson of Alyeska and indicated that Exxon was on its way. My concern was that in the mobilization process there was a period of time in which no immediate action was taken, and that time is what allowed the ideal conditions to pass, and now we're into a situation where dispersal is the primary method of eliminating the immediate problem, that the cleanup exercise is going to take months. And I guess to sum up, I am very cautious in my approach to what is going on. We have no choice but to take a wait-and-see attitude. But insofar as my recommendations when I get back down to Juneau, I feel very strongly that this is at least the fourth incident, the first being the Prince William Sound that went adrift several years ago for several hours in which there was no response capability. The Glacier Bay is a very recent incident over in Cook Inlet in which the Coast Guard indicated that the response was poor and they took over the operations there. We had a ship off the west coast that the people in British Columbia were very concerned was going to leak oil onto their beaches, and now we have this, which is certainly a catastrophic incident. I've come to the conclusion that to ensure the operation of the contingency plan, we need to develop a strike force that has the capability of immediate response. We need to have the booming material, the absorbent material, the vessels, and the capability to respond on very short notice with an immediate reaction to begin the mechanical pickup of this type of thing. And someone indicated to me last night, they said, well, you know, if you had a capability such as that, it probably wouldn't be utilized only in Alaska. It probably would be something that would be called all over the world to work, simply because there is no organization like that. It was about 8 years ago when we here in Valdez considered the idea of warehousing at city expense the equipment that would have been necessary to handle a spill such as this. We were assured at that time that was not waste, that was not a good idea, and we're told in fact, and what caused us to drop the idea was that it would be a monumental waste of city money. Exercising 2020 hindsight, I think all of us here in Valdez feel the same sort of feeling about what's gone on, what's transpired during the last several days. I can only say that the word sick has been used to describe it by several people in Valdez, that it makes them sick that this sort of thing has happened. Certainly the fishermen are very concerned about their livelihoods, and I think it's the responsibility of the state of Alaska to ensure that whatever capabilities we have, we employ, whatever damages are incurred are recompensed.
Lieutenant Governor, you mentioned that we need to have the response capability. Is your feeling now that it will be possible for the state or the state in concert with federal regulators to require the oil industry to maintain that kind of stockpile? Or is that something the state should consider doing on its own, perhaps by increasing the revenue demands on the oil companies to allow us to provide that responsibility if they don't?
I don't view it as a function that would be directly within the purview of the state in the sense that we would hire state workers to do something such as this. But I think that we should get the equipment, that perhaps we should independently contract with someone, just as Alyeska did, in fact, several years ago. They had a contractor there with personnel on the site who were engaged quite like fire. And they polished the equipment when they were down. They went out and engaged in regular drills. I think we need to go back to that concept. I think that the state should directly contract to have that capability, and I think the cost of that capability should be reimbursed by the owner companies.
One other point that has been raised, I know this has come up again and again from representatives of CDFU and some other fishing groups, is a strong feeling that a partial explanation, and this I must preface is really an allegation because there's no way to substantiate this at this point, but an allegation that perhaps the reason why the mechanical response was so slow was that a decision was made early on that the oil companies simply would use dispersant on this. Is this an allegation or a concern that you have any comment or reaction to?
I asked that specific question of the people from Exxon last night. I indicated to them that was a very strong rumor, that many of the press people had asked me whether I knew anything about that, and I asked the specific question that you're asking me now. The response was that no, that was not the original plan, but that with an oil spill of this magnitude, certainly dispersing capabilities had to be something that would be utilized. It is our position from the state perspective that mechanical recovery is the first method of recovery. I have to concur with Mr. Ariasi that at this stage of the game, you literally could employ every skimmer available, and you're not going to be able to pick it up in that fashion. But it begs the question as to whether there was an immediate response, whether if the tanker had been immediately boomed, whether the mechanical cleanup could not have been employed. I have concluded in my own mind that even if one could say that mechanical recovery would not have gathered up all of the oil, certainly it would have gathered up a much larger, and when I say much larger, I'm talking tens of thousands of barrels of oil by the mechanical method, eliminating it completely from the water if that procedure had been engaged in immediately. The counter to that argument and what the explanation given to me was that even if they were faced with that decision today, they don't know whether they would employ a boom around the tanker because of all of the fumes that would be in the area. My response to that was just a couple of months ago, right here in Port Valdez, a tanker began to leak. They boomed it and really engaged in what most of us consider to be an exemplary cleanup of that particular spill. In fact, I told Mr. Ariasi last night that in my opinion, that probably gained a good feeling of public relations because the spill was there. It had the potential for disaster, but because they engaged it properly and were able to mechanically remove the oil from the water, that actually resulted in a public relations plus. I'm not convinced that the failure to boom that vessel immediately hasn't led to downstream consequences that are far beyond the level that they had imagined.
One other question, Lieutenant Governor. This morning at the Cordova Fisherman District for CDFU and UFA press conference, at the conclusion of that, four members of the village of Tetitlic, which is the closest native village to Valdez and in fact is adjacent to the spill site, were here. And as the discussion came around to the potential toxic impacts of the airborne pollutants involved in burning, there were reports from these folks at this point. I've not heard any follow-up on that, but report from these four men from Tetitlic Village that there were people in the community who had gotten sick from the fumes of the burning. I know that a representative of EDEC, who was here at the time, came and spoke to them. Does the state have resources it can mobilize to ensure the safety of the villagers in Tetitlic and, I assume, in Elimar as well?
In fact, before a burn is employed, a permit has to be acquired from ADEC, and part of that permitting process is to set out a scheme of requirements which are designed to ensure that the smoke does not go to a populated area. In other words, when direction is considered, when velocity is considered, all of those types of things. I have been told that the experimental burn that took place on Friday was not done with a permit. I don't know for sure, and I intend to check that out. They have been given a permit, but it is done under very strict conditions, with the principal concern being human population, so that a burn is not conducted at a time when the emittents are blown into Elimar or Tetitlic or any other populated area.
The last time we spoke, you'd indicated that you were due back to Juneau for a meeting, I think, tomorrow. Do you anticipate still being heading back to Southeast, or will you be here on the scene any longer?
Well, I have a meeting with the governor tomorrow, and one of the things, I talked to him yesterday morning before I left Juneau, and I think the conversation that I related here to the people of Valdez is pretty much the conversation that I'm going to have with him. I think that in addition to that, I will indicate to him that it's absolutely imperative that the state of Alaska, and I think the governor certainly recognizes this, that's why he was here on Friday. He understands the importance that the state support is to ensure that everything humanly possible is done, and I think the governor has indicated to me that he would employ whatever measures that it took. He recognizes the significance of this. He declared it a disaster area yesterday and is seeking federal support on it. And he has indicated to me that whatever means are at the disposal of the state of Alaska, he intends to employ them.
Well, thank you very much. I know that there are meetings happening everywhere, and I'm sure you have an agenda. Any other comment or observation before you head on out the door here?
Well, I guess the only observation I would have, Dave, I've always said, you know, every time we get together and every time I come back here, that it's always good to get back here. I guess this is the one time that I would have to say that I have different feelings about it. It's under these conditions, you just don't have the same feelings about it, and certainly I wish it were under better conditions. I think the people of Valdez have really demonstrated their mettle and have held up very well, given the magnitude of all of this, and I would hope that they dig down a little deeper and as we go on, in the hopes that we can get all of this straightened out with minimum consequences.
Thank you very much. Lieutenant Governor, State of Alaska, Stephen McAlpine, talking with me here at the Valdez Civic Center at the conclusion of the Exxon Conference. Also with us here at the conference hall are the mayors of the City of Valdez and the City of Cordova. John Devins, Mayor of Valdez, Erlene Johansson, the Mayor of Cordova. Gentlemen, I'd like to pose to each of you one at a time here the same question I started talking to Lieutenant Governor McAlpine about after a lengthy review of just statistics and figures and status. Frank Irossi, the president of Exxon Shipping, then proceeded to share his impressions about his feelings and impressions, his gut feelings, I think I described it. And the first comment he made was that their confidence is growing by the gaining by the hour. And I would, given the work that you two have done, the two mayors, and the input you're getting from your city administrations and the citizens in your communities, do you feel that, is your confidence getting by the hour? And I guess I'll start with Erlene Johansson, mayor of Cordova. Are you feeling as confident as Frank Irossi at this point?
Well, Dave, I'm basically an optimistic sort of guy. And however, in this particular case, my optimism is extremely cautious. The magnitude of the incident here evidences that there is extreme lack of preparedness, and it appears to be both in the private and public sector. As a result, we see what appears to be potential big impact on our Prince William Sound area, and it's imperative that we collect everybody together and march forward to try to straighten it out. Optimistic. Extremely cautious. A lot to be done yet. Extremely a lot to be done yet.
Mayor Devins?
Well, if Mayor Johansson is optimistic, I don't know what you could call Frank, because any man that could say that in one breath that we're growing more confident by the hour and within 90 seconds also tell us that a tanker with a million barrels of oil still on board just rotated 12 degrees because of the wind and they can't get out there because of weather conditions has got to be a very optimistic soul. I'm certainly hoping that we're able to do something to solve the problem. I would agree with Erling 100%, but I am very, very concerned. We've got a tanker out there that is severely damaged. The wind is blowing. And we have well past the 72-hour mark, and we still haven't gotten any cleanup done.
Yesterday, I know both the City of Valdez and City of Cordova had requested Governor Cooper declare the disaster, make a disaster declaration, and my understanding is that having done that, the governor did respond. My understanding is that in the afternoon and early evening, a compromise working arrangement was reached between Exxon, the Coast Guard, and the state of Alaska. Rather than simply take control of the cleanup exercise from Exxon, that a joint working team was established between Exxon, the Coast Guard, and the state. At this point, do you feel that that response is adequate, or should the state take an even stronger role in directing the cleanup? And I'll start this time with Mayor Devins.
You know, actually, I don't know how to respond to that, because I don't know that there is anyone that at this point, this late date, that is going to be able to do much to clean that up. I mean, we've got a storm brewing out there. You've got 300,000 barrels plus oil floating over more than 100 square miles. And so far, really nothing has been accomplished. I know today, and we were all very hopeful that today was going to be the big strike. They were going to go in there, they were going to do some burning, they were going to do some disbursements, they were going to do some skimming, and now we've got the bad weather. you know, I don't blame the state for not wanting to go in there and immediately take this over, because it's a no-win situation at this point. I'm glad that Governor Cooper took the strong stand that he did. I think there is some need for direction. I'm disappointed that there hasn't been more organization. You know, an oil spill is not something, this is the largest in the history of the United States, but we've had other oil spills. One would think that one could mobilize faster and get more work done in the time that it has transpired.
Mayor Johansson?
Many people in the Prince William Sound area have been under the assumption or the assurance by the oil companies and the pipeline companies that in the case of oil spill emergencies, there would be adequate cleanup responses. And I think what we're seeing, that in this particular instance, there is a big perception that the response has been inadequate. And as Mayor Devens so aptly identified yesterday, it looks now like we've been, what, through 2 or 3 days of relatively good weather for the operation, and now the weather is deteriorating. We see today that the helicopters can't fly. We see today that certain vessels can't move, and we also see problems with the ship itself shifting on the reef out there. So it still looks like an extremely critical and difficult situation requiring full efficiency and full speed ahead.
Mayor Johansson, I note that at the conference last night, Franco Rossi responded to what had been a specific request, I believe, from some of the Cordovans about establishing a claims office or a claims response group in Cordova, as well as one in Valdez. Do you have a sense that to this point the community of Cordova has been able to establish communication with the powers that be in this cleanup effort to adequate to ensure that the Cordova concerns are being met?
Well, frankly, I believe that many of the Cordova concerns have not been adequately identified and addressed, both by the oil companies and the pipeline company and the shipping company. Also, possibly some of the state and federal agencies may not at this point yet recognize the impact on Cordova of this incident. What I see is spring fisheries and also tourism. Speaking specifically to fisheries, spring and summer fisheries, a large percentage of the Prince William Sound origin salmon is brought to Cordova for processing, for canning, for freezing, for fresh production. This has the potential, if the smolts, if the exiting salmon fry now are jeopardized, if the herring roe, the kelp are jeopardized, to have a massive economic impact on Cordova, both short-term and long-term, whether it's returning salmon 2 to 7 years from now, depending on their life cycle, or whether it's just an aura of Prince William Sound fish values being deteriorated in a market perception basis. Now, I had a meeting with Frank yesterday on this, and at the fishermen's meeting yesterday, there was Jack Lamb was there, Ricky Ott, and some others were there, and they said, look, we need to have a claims office in the Cordova area. And so in my meeting with the president yesterday, I reiterated that, and he assured me at that time that there would be one opened up within a day or two. I haven't been back to Cordova yet, but I trust that that will advance itself, and I'm actually pleased to see it. I believe that many of the news media have not identified Cordova as a significant player in this event. KPHU and the public radio has, KLAM has, but outside of that, there's been very little or minimal or no coverage of this event's impact on the community of Cordova.
Well, it may well be also that for the national media, the folks here in the Civic Center who are not members of the press are simply civilians. Those of us who live in Valdez recognize the number of Cordova fishermen and the fact that the bulk of the testimony, the bulk of the questioning and information about the fisheries has come from Cordova fishermen, and then with a few Valdez fishermen and processors, but it has been quite a group and entourage here. Go ahead and follow up.
Mayor Devens had been in contact with me in Cordova on a very frequent basis before I came over. That was for about 2 days. And the mayor, Mayor Devens, together we put together this request to the governor to assist in this thing. And it's good to see that these results, that the governor is working with Mayor Devens and then with Cordova on this. We'd like to see federal assistance to the state to help offset this on a region-wide basis. It's not a strictly Valdez issue, strictly Cordova issue, strictly Tetitli. We're talking about a region-wide issue.
Well, that brings another question that I was thinking of. Obviously, in terms of information, there's been communication between the two city governments. Have the two of you, while Mayor Johansson has been here in Valdez, been able to map out any joint strategy for the two communities to follow with in pursuing either redress for the oil companies or prompting or federal or state response? And I'll start with Mayor Devens.
Well, actually, we've had quite a bit of time to communicate, but there's so seldom that you can sit down and talk very long before someone puts a microphone in your face. I don't think that we've gotten as far into that. I think the other thing that is a problem right now is we really are just now starting to sense the critical nature of what not only is now, but what is to be. And I think the major tack that we've taken so far is to jointly go forward to Cooper, encourage him to get a declaration that this is a disaster area, get some federal funding in here to help the businesses that are going to be affected. I think, in fact, just about an hour ago, Erling talked to me about just exactly what you're suggesting. How can we look now at the future and what needs to be done to protect, and not only Cordova and Valdez, but Whittier is going to be affected, Tetitli is going to be affected, Chenega is going to be affected, probably other communities that are not directly on Prince William Sound will be affected by this.
Well, it has, in terms of marine products, fish products, it has fallout for a large area, exactly. And Mayor Devens and I were planning to get together this afternoon for purposes of identifying certain steps we can take jointly now, our two communities, two cities, and the others.
Follow-up question to you, Mayor Johansson. I know that there is a meeting, a town meeting scheduled in Cordova for Tuesday night, tomorrow night. Do you have any comment just on, or to share with us what the focus or point of the meeting is, or what you would hope to have? Is it going to be basically an informational meeting, or do you hope to bring folks from the response team or Alyeska over for that?
Well, as I understand it at this time, Dave, it's most likely to be an informational sort of meeting, because I've identified maybe a half dozen or 8 or 10 Cordova residents here, maybe not even that many. So the number of people with detailed information is rather small. Our intent is to return to Cordova, or those who can, and be able to disseminate the information and then identify concerns, local concerns, and action plans in the Cordova area. Whether or not Alyeska pipeline people or Exxon shipping people or other interested parties will join us, I don't know at this point, but that's being checked on.
Just a question. I know this just occurred to me. I don't know whether it's occurred to anybody else yet. I know that finally the Bartlett was allowed to leave Valdez the other night, and in support of the, if there's any way that, for example, the ferry could be used to move people, material, or just people back and forth through communities during this crisis, might it be possible to get the DOT to adjust their schedules to provide some sort of more regular communication back and forth for the communities for the duration of this situation?
I guess it's possible. Obviously, the port is not fully opened yet. They did allow the ferry to get out. I assume they'd allow it to come back in. I know they talked with Ray and Sandy Cesarini about getting some of their fishermen in. So they are trying to think up some contingencies about how to get boats in and out of the harbor.
What we saw yesterday was there was a risk that Cordova would have been cut off without a road, without ferry, strictly the airport service. That risk was essentially eliminated when the Coast Guard gave authority to Captain Clabo to transit through the port of Valdez and continue to Cordova by a circuitous route of Naked Island area. In my personal opinion, it just re-emphasizes the importance of having a road connection to Cordova. If this Bartlett had been restricted from leaving the port of Valdez, we could have, at the most busiest time of our year, been extremely isolated once again. For example, it left 3 hours late. It could have left 2 weeks late. It could have left 3 days late.
Well, I know that both of you gentlemen have other meetings to go to, and I'd mentioned that you'd be working together with some to work up a joint strategy for dealing with the state. Any final comment for listeners in Valdez or Cordova before we at least release you from this one microphone?
Well, I guess, you know, we'll try and keep everyone informed. I really appreciate both of the radio stations. You guys have been doing a yeoman's job of keeping people posted, keeping the information flowing. I wake up to the radio, even went to sleep last night, or I guess it was this morning. You know, I think the important thing right now is some kind of an information flow, and that's what we're trying to do. It's very hard to get all the information. We have press conferences, and I suspect we hear what we're told. But right now, we'll all try and keep the information flowing.
Comment, Mayor Johansson?
Yes, Mayor Devens and I are doing the best we can to look out for our community's interests in this situation, and we're hanging in there and looking out for our community's interests.
Thank you very much, Mayor Elaine Johansson of Cordova, Mayor John Devens of Valdez. Thanks for joining us, and we'll look for, if at any point there is information or announcements to be made to the communities, we certainly hope you'll give us a call and we'll do our best to help out. This is the Alaska Public Radio Network.